The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
All right, now, welcome to Tony Curry Radio. You know, we are so blessed. We've had so many great opportunities to create some of the super coolest new shows on radio here at Tony Curry Radio. And I'm proud to announce the first installment of a brand new show called Mission Minded. You know, so much goes in to growing a successful business, putting the pieces together to be successful in any endeavor, business and otherwise. And I couldn't think of a better partner to do it than Michael Coleman. You may know that name, the executive director of the Jimmy Hill Mission, but he's so much more than that. Michael, welcome to your first show of Mission Minded, man. How are you?
I am doing fantastic and just so excited to get this whole project underway.
This is going to be awesome. You and I have been talking about doing something like this for about 8-9 months. We've broken bread many times. We talk, and I even said, listen, when we do this show, man, let's pretend we're sitting around a big old burger, and we're just shooting the bull, and let's change the world. And I think it's interesting, but this is our first date. So for people who don't know who you are and what you have done in the past and perhaps what your future will be, share some nice personal information pieces with our listening audience here.
Yeah, so I was a troubled teen for a whole bunch of reasons I won't go into, but went into the military at a young age, loved it, found structure, found purpose. It gave me discipline. Got out of the military. I've done some pastoral work, but got into the nonprofit world and really developed a passion for people in poverty. And I've seen the best of nonprofits. I've seen the worst of it. Walked away after my first year and a half of a nonprofit. It was not a real healthy situation. And started one from scratch. And so I've been through every aspect of that, of building it from a concept to getting the IRS declaration letter, and just building up your donor base from the very beginning, encountering every do and every don't. And I've probably made as many mistakes as anybody out there. And did that for 8 years and made sure that that was a thriving nonprofit. It's still doing well today, but really had a great opportunity to come to Birmingham and really to an organization that had been here for 75 years at the time and really throw myself into this work and build on what's been established by great people before me and continue to grow it to become impactful and to change people's lives. And of course, the things we want to talk about, I have a faith-based perspective on what we do, but I want this to be very practical as well so that if people are in the nonprofit world or interested in going to nonprofit world, it does not have to be faith-based for them to have a great impact on our community and our society. So my information will sometimes I'll try to specify exactly what angle I'm taking on that to make it applicable to everybody.
And again, this is not a show specifically about the Jimmy Hill Mission, but we'd be remiss to mention the fact that you are the executive director and you have taken that business. You joined the forces with Jimmy Hill Mission back in 2019, and you've taken it to some greener pastures that I don't think even people that donate to Jimmy Hill Mission thought was possible. You mentioned just a few seconds ago, though, I think it's fascinating that you've been part of some non-for-profit organizations that didn't make it. What normally is the big failing process of NFPs that don't make it?
Boy, there's so many things you can point to. I would just, if you start with the executive director, it's been my experience that lots of times we get into nonprofit world because we're passionate about something in our community. And it could be homelessness. It could be mentoring youth. It could be just a whole host of where we see gaps in societal problems. And we just want to delve in. So we have the right heart. We have the right experience, the right even expectations when it comes to jumping into that kind of work. However, what we fail to recognize is that any nonprofit is first and foremost a business. Mm-hmm. And so I have seen people who are so great dealing with the public and they're passionate and with clients, but they simply don't have the skill set to run a business and do budgets and hire people and lead people and do all the necessary things to run a business successfully. And so, and that's it's more and more difficult to find a person who is both skilled in business relations, but also can understand what the purpose is and relate to the clients. and be able to then carry that out to donors and convey that passion and convey the mission and help them see what's going on and what you want to do, and bringing them on board enough that they're willing to financially support that or through their volunteer hours.
And our first please go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so lots of times we look at the nonprofit work as, oh, this is all good stuff, but we don't really think, oh, I really got to have a skilled person. But you do have to have somebody who can have one foot in each of those worlds if you want to have long-term success.
And we're certainly talking about non-for-profits in our first installment here of Mission Minded. He's Michael Coleman, the executive director from Jimmy Hill Mission. I'm Tony Curry, but we'll also get into entrepreneurial footprints and everything else that goes along with business and how to be successful in putting those pieces together in episodes throughout the entire year. A lot of times when you talk about people being very passionate about a situation, it is a personal tragedy that has affected them personally and or their families. And I think you bring up a great point, because you're passionate about something and you want to raise awareness or money or advocate for a particular situation, you think you can just trailblaze. If you are a person that wants to start something like this, but you aren't really business savvy, what's the best first move to make?
Well, in my opinion, if you're somebody who wants to do that, and you have to kind of hone it down on kind of what your sweet spot is, what is your vision? Because a lot of people will head off in a direction, and then once they get there, they come to understand this is really big. And when you're trying to communicate to somebody, let's just say you're passionate about addiction recovery. Let's say you've had somebody in your family that passed away from an overdose. We see this all the time. And they're like, oh, I want to make a difference. I want to make sure this doesn't happen to other families. Mm-hmm. And then they delve off into it and they're trying to communicate to someone, hey, I want to get in the nonprofit world. And they're like, do what specifically? Well, I want to do everything. And so what happens is people have to begin by kind of fine tuning what the vision is and where they want to go and what the end state is and the effect that they're wanting to have. But then they have to do an honest assessment about themselves. Am I the right person to lead that? You know, just because you're passionate about something or just because you have a story to tell doesn't mean necessarily that it's in your best interest or society's best interest for you to delve off and start a nonprofit. One of the things that I did, I was looking at creating a workforce development program for people in poverty. And it was patterned after a ministry in Memphis, Tennessee. So I made two trips to Memphis, Tennessee, and I researched and kind of got the essence of what they were trying to do. And it really just set my heart on fire. I was like, boy, I really want to do this. And so I came back to the Montgomery, Alabama area, and I began to investigate around Montgomery. I wanted to look at all the workforce development programs that were there, because what I didn't want to do is come in and create something or add to something that was already going on. And sometimes we do that. I'll give you this one example. I had a young lady that came to me who was just so passionate. She said, Michael, I've heard you establish your own nonprofit, so I want to come and just get your advice. I said, sure, absolutely. Be glad to help you. She came in and said she wanted to start a mentoring program. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to begin to walk you through the process of things to think about. Mm-hmm. And I said, let's say, for example, I'm a donor. You pitched to me what you want to do. And she did. And my question back to her was, well, there's already 19 mentoring programs in Montgomery.
Yep.
So number one, why are you going to duplicate what's already being done? Or why aren't you coming along somebody? If you do have a vision, have you investigated those 19 other mentoring programs to see if somehow you could come in and help that one rather than go through the process of starting another one? And the reality is she hasn't thought of those things. So I have seen unnecessary duplication of services in certain areas. Now, you could get into the psychology of why that comes about. It could be, you know, people want control of their idea, or they envision nonprofit. If I start a nonprofit, I can be my own boss, mm-hmm. and I can work for myself. And those are not good reasons. And ultimately, that nonprofit's going to fail if your motivation is anything other than to make an impact on society through meeting a need and a demand that's already there.
Is it always important, though, to make sure, and I saw this with Tony Curry Radio. People are like, you're starting a classic rock station, and there's classic rock stations everywhere. What's going to set you apart? What's going to make you different? What's going to make you better? Are you about taking existing ideas and forging forward on those ideas? In this particular case, you're talking about a mentorship. Or is it better off to have a vision of, hey, this is how it's been done and this is how I want to do it? And is that enough to separate yourself?
Well, the only if I were sitting in front of somebody and they were asking me that question, what I would say is, if you're going to go out and raise funds for a mentoring program, and there's already 19 others doing a mentoring program, you're going to have to distinguish yourself in some way. So if I were a donor, I would ask the tough question, okay, why would I support an up-and-coming nonprofit rather than donate to those who've already been doing this for years and by most regards, doing it successfully? So you would have to have, you would have to be bringing something to the table that is a unique approach, but your approach has to be solving a problem that the other programs in place are not addressing. Mm-hmm. And so what I've seen is some people, you have what I call unnecessary duplication, which is, it's maybe a different way, but it's ultimately still just accomplishing, you know, the same thing. But in my case, when I looked around, there were no workforce development programs in the sense that they would take people who were kind of stuck in poverty, didn't have any skill sets. They had great barriers to learning, to moving forward, from transportation to harmful home environments. And so when I found out there was none like that, okay, well, I'm really filling in a gap. So that this is something that I need. But I've also been at places and seen, oh, well, these other people are already doing it. So the question I asked was, do they have a caseload they can't manage? So let's just take a homeless shelter, for instance. Let's say, I could duplicate a homeless shelter if that homeless shelter can't meet the demands of sheltering the homeless in a community. That's a necessary duplication. We need more of this. But typically, that's not what's done. We typically have our own ideas. We want control. We want to do things our way, and we delve off the nonprofit world. And so you create multiple services for the same problem. And we'll talk about this in future episodes, but one of the great tragedies is when you do that, you kind of begin to build your own kingdom and you don't collaborate with others. And here's why, because you're fighting for funding out of the same pie that the other people are fighting for.
Yeah.
And so it's about survival at that point, survival. And I need that money to be able to do what I want to do. And I don't want you to know who my donors are. I don't want you to be getting credit. I want to get the glory. And
we could do a whole show on that too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, those things I told you, we could do a month of shows. And so the nonprofit environment as a whole can get very unhealthy when you have leaders who don't have a collaborative spirit and who don't put the clients first. When you put the clients first, the goal is client care and client overcoming their problems. And if I can do all that, great. Or if I can help somebody else do that, great. Or if I need to reach out and help and call on somebody else to help my people, great. That's where our heart should be, is that we're serving people or we're serving a need. And it's not about who gets the credit, who gets the glory, who gets all the recognition. It's about meeting demands. And I have just found, as a whole, even those who talk about collaboration, ultimately, it gets a lot of lip service paid to it.
This is Michael Coleman's first show of Mission Minded. I'm Tony Curry. I'm just happy to be a part of this big thing, and it's going to go on every single week here on Tony Curry Radio exclusively, and coming up soon, a partnership with Spotify. You'll be able to go back and archive every episode that we've done. You talk about vision. I hear about vision, and usually the vision comes before the business plan. How many times have you started something where your vision changes? you've got this idea, and I think we always want to shoot for the stars, right? We say, hey, listen, I want to be the biggest in this or the best in this, and that's your vision. But then as you get into, and it doesn't have to be a non-for-profit, it could just be a business venture, your vision changes. How often does that happen when you've seen things? Is it important that it does change, or is it important to stick to what you went into?
Absolutely. It's critical that we have our vision of where we want to get to. The problem is, or the challenge is for leaders, is as you begin to lay out what your goals are, what your objectives are, those will begin to change because the pathway is never from beginning to end what you think it will be. And so what you find is, or my experience has been, is if I want to do this and I cast the vision, so you have to have the who, what, where, when, and you know, here's where we're going. Here's why we're going there. Here's whose life's going to be different. And so you start that process with a set of assumptions. Okay, I'm assuming that I'm going to be able to raise the money to get there. I'm assuming that I can do it within this time frame. So you make a lot of assumptions along with the vision. And what reality is those assumptions don't always pan out. Mm-hmm. And so the variables in the equation of accomplishing a vision will change as you go along. And the leaders who don't have an ability to adjust to that and don't have an ability to self-correct based on the circumstances on the ground are the ones that really struggle to bring their vision to fruition.
It's Michael Coleman. It is Mission Minded and a show exclusively heard here on Tony Curry Radio every single week right here. And of course, you can see us on social media and coming soon, partnering up with Spotify so you can go back and listen to all of the shows. There are currently 1.5 million non-for-profits in this country. That's 200,000 more than we had just 3 years ago. And there are 29 different types of tax-exempt organizations. So there's a lot to choose from. We're seeing right now the great mass resignation, and I think in a lot of ways it's a wonderful thing. I do think it's an overcorrection of our workforce where a lot of people do want to do the right thing, and they want to make a difference not only in their families but in their communities and their cities and certainly in their country. When you have a lot of people wanting to take on new responsibilities and trying to run non-for-profits or at least help cause one or bring one, does that scare you a little bit? That everyone's trying to do the right thing. We've got a lot of helpers out there. It could maybe be working at a food bank or working at the Jimmy Hill Mission or maybe even working at their school when they're short staffed. But does it scare you a little bit that many people are interested now in wanting to get things off the ground from a non-for-profit standpoint?
Well, I try to be optimistic about people as a whole and that when they're presented with problems and they see gaps, that they want to move forward and help that. And I think that's positive for society. You have to step back for a second and say, well, you know, why do nonprofits even exist to begin with? And really what you see is like in Alabama, for instance, our tax base is very low. And I intentionally, this is not political at all. I stay out of politics. But our tax base is low. And so lots of times you don't have as many public services here as you have. You still have the need, but you don't have as many public services. And each community has to decide for themselves what they're willing to invest their tax dollars into. And so the reason nonprofits exist is it's a call for people to be able to come in and fill the gaps in the services that the government can do. And lots of times it's done when it's done in a business format. It's done more effectively and more efficiently. From a business perspective. So I want people to come in and be a part of that. It does concern me in a couple areas. One is people forget that nonprofits, one of the things that's a real challenge is sometimes we can't pay what a similar position is out in the community. Yeah. So, for instance, we can't pay our IT person the same thing that they can make on the street. And so what we try to do is have a nonprofit with very good benefits to because we understand people have to take care of themselves, take care of their families, but we have to raise all their salaries. And so we typically can't match what they can earn. So most of the people who are working in a nonprofit environment are there because their heart leads them to that. They're like, yes, I know I can make more money, but I want to make a difference. I want my time in life to change lives. So we bring those kind of people in, and that's a great fit for nonprofit work. But from a business perspective, lots of times you get a lot of mediocrity out there as well. Mm-hmm. You get people who lend over into the nonprofit work, or, you know, I should say blend over into the nonprofit field. And they kind of get stuck in there. And this is where you get, where you see it both in government agencies and in nonprofits sometimes, is it's a very exhausting, mentally exhausting effort to come in every day and deal with other people's problems. Mm-hmm. And it's just like pastors in churches, it's a very high burnout rate. But people still need a job. So they're like, you know, I'm just surviving in here. And so you'll begin to see the impact of that nonprofit not be what it was in the past. Because, and this goes back to the leadership, a leader has to come in and be able to say, I've got to ignite the hearts and minds of not only my clients, but my staff, because I need them to come in every day engaged. I need them living this. I need them breathing this work and caring about it. And so it requires somebody special to come in and says, I'm willing to make my work about this and my life about this at not maybe sometimes as good a pay as I could otherwise get. So the leader, you may be passionate about helping clients, but I'm telling you, if you're not able to bring along people with you, if you're not able to recognize the burnout rate and the things that they suffer in their families and be able to navigate them, then you burn them out. And then you either have a mediocre employee or they end up leaving you because they've lost their heart and their purpose and their fire for what you're doing. So we're challenged always. When people leave the workforce, they're leaving the nonprofit world right along with it. And so it makes it harder on us because you have people out there on the streets right now who are saying, hey, I can get paid. This job normally would pay $12 an hour. Now we're paying $17 an hour. And so we're not getting sometimes the creme de la creme, if you will. Sometimes we're getting those who are like, well, I'll have this or I'll take this. And so it's a real challenge for us to fight through that, to match a heart and say, are you willing to come here because you have a burning desire to change people's lives? Or are you just looking for something that's not going to be too tough for you to do?
It takes a special person to do that.
Business has that challenge. They want somebody that's going to come in and give it their all. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand from a human perspective, figuratively speaking, it is draining their emotional tanks every single day. And so you have to recognize, if I want that person to continue to put out emotions and feeling and fire from them towards our clients, then I've got to find ways to fill their tank up on a regular basis and to keep it full so they can dispense that inner strength and emotion that they have. So you're not just caring for clients. You have to begin to care for staff and figure out what all that looks like. And again, that's another whole show right there of talking about how you do that. But as a leader, you've got to recognize it. And I've seen leaders who are so committed to the clients that they keep their head down. And then they look up after leading an organization and nobody's following them anymore because they've all died out. They've all died on the vine. You've used them up.
Yeah.
And they just quit the nonprofit world because they don't have anything left to give. And it's a tragedy, but it's something that's very common.
He's Michael Coleman. You may know him as the executive director of the Jimmy Hill Mission. And on our first episode here of Mission Minded, which you'll hear weekly on Tony Curry Radio and soon on Spotify and a platform we've teamed up with those fine folks. You'll be able to archive all these shows. Mission Minded, of course, brought to you by Michael Coleman and Jimmy Hill Mission. And of course, Tony Curry Radio. We only have one more question here. We got time for one more. And of course, we'll do these shows every single week. I always think it's interesting when we're talking about a non-for-profit, something that does not make money, that takes money to operate. And I always wonder what happens when you make more money than you're supposed to. We obviously know that if you're not making enough money to run an organization and to operate properly, then you're not going to be in business for very long. But when you do make more money than you're supposed to, what happens to that money? Do we have rainy day slush fund? How does that work for a non-for-profit? Because I think everyone thinks that would be a wonderful thing to have more money than we actually need here at Jimmy Hill Mission or any other NFP.
Yeah. So, you know, Tony, that's a common question I get, and it's really comes from just a general misunderstanding about the nonprofit world. Nonprofit doesn't mean that you don't raise money or that you don't have sources of income or that you have to somehow your balance sheet, you have to spend every dime that you raise. Not-for-profit means, as opposed to a for-profit, if I was a for-profit business owner, I'm going to create a product, I'm going to sell it, and I'm going to pay my staff my overhead, and then I'm going to get to keep whatever's left. Nonprofit's it's an organizational structure that says you're providing a service and you are regulated to have a board over that. So any amount of money that you raise over what you spend has to go back into the operation of the ministry. So that's what it means not-for-profit. Is if we were to raise $100,000 more than we spend this year at Jimmy Hill Mission, I don't get to pocket that as a business owner would, but I have to account for that and make sure that it's all being utilized for the business. So, and the reality is I would encourage everybody wants to be able to have that rainy day fund, because we can't lose sight of the fact that a nonprofit is still a business. So if we feel like our budget this year is $6 million, well, when the economy is going well, we typically can raise what our needs are. But what if the economy crashes or we go into a deep recession for a couple of years? I may have to lay people off because I can't raise the same amount of money. So a smart business says, hey, you want to set aside not a slush fund, so to speak, but a rainy day fund that, you know, you can cover 6 months of operating cost or wages. And that's just an example to work towards that, so that in the event of your donor base crumbles, or you have something that happens within the organization and a leadership change, and sometimes that can affect your fundraising, or something happens and you get bad publicity, that can affect it. You don't want there to be long-term negative ramifications as a result of that. So I think all of us work towards trying to have a bit of a reserve just because it's good business practice to do so.
I knew this would be a home run, Michael. Great first show talking about NFPs. And of course, this is just the tip of the proverbial iceberg here on Mission Minded. It's going to air every single week here on Tony Curry Radio soon on Spotify with our partnership. Fantastic show. And we'll get after it again next week, my friend, for episode number 2. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tony. I'm really looking forward to this.